quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, the Iron Cowboy, James Lawrence. As I said in the introduction with James, as you'll hear shortly, he's completed what has been described as one of the greatest achievements in the history of human endurance. 50 Ironman Lent triathlons in 50 consecutive days in each of the 50 US states. For those of you unfamiliar with Ironman distance triathlon, it consists of a 2.4-mile swim, followed by a 112-mile bike ride, and then a marathon 26.2 miles to finish. So James did 50 in 50 days, and he traveled to each of the 50 US states, and it's an unbelievable achievement. I read his book earlier this year, Iron Cowboy, Redefined Impossible, and it's one of those books that makes you question all your own limits, because you're hearing and seeing inside the mind of somebody who's physically and mentally suffering so bad because your body is just breaking down, but also understanding the negativity that was being fueled in the lead up to such a challenge, where people didn't believe it was physically possible for the human body to do 50 Ironmans in 50 consecutive days, particularly with the travel schedule. So each day, James was averaging about 14 hours a day training. He was burning thousands and thousands of calories. And today's episode, it's kind of broke into two parts, nearly unintentionally so, but I'm very happy that it went this way. So the first half is very much fitness. If you've read my book, The Fitness Mindset, today's episode takes a very similar approach in terms of the first half is all fitness and then the second half is all mindset based. And it wasn't planned this way. It was just the direction we went. And because James is an unbelievable motivational speaker, and I highly recommend him for any corporate executives listening to the podcast, he's an unbelievable inspiration for how to break down bigger targets and goals and working on a step-by-step process to hit even the biggest things and work towards the biggest goals. But the first half, we talk training. So Ironman in general, so triathlon, what he did in the lead up to training for the 50, his nutrition, how he eats, some advice for beginners looking to get into triathlon. And then we took a bit of a shift about halfway through towards the mindset. So this triggered off the back of me asking James, when people ask him saying they don't have time to do something, because he's got five kids, he's got a wife, he's an online business, and obviously training for something like 50 Ironmans in 50 days is going to eat into a lot of time. And it sent off a beautiful wave of a trigger of not getting caught up in that excuse that you do have time, you're just not prioritizing things. So he talks about the sacrifice. So for him, he sacrificed sleep. He was like, it was the only option that he had in terms of when the kids were younger. If he had to train, he just slept less. And again, it not talking about the health or emotional side of lack of sleep, but the point of sacrificing and making sure that you're mapping your actions to whatever your ambition is. And the bigger the ambition, the more actions you need to take, or the bigger actions you need to take, will light an absolute fire under you. We talk about the importance of surrounding yourself with the right people. James is massive on his inner circle and how cutting out just anybody who didn't fuel the end goal of finishing the 50, he just cut them out completely. And doing the same thing on social media and dealing with negativity when it comes your way, and his thought process and inner dialogue when negativity comes his way. I love this episode. It's so inspiring to think that you can push the physical body to the point where it's ready to break. And reading James's book about on day 30, when we talk about his lowest point during the 50, you're understanding that the mind is such a powerful thing, that your body gives up way before your mind does. And not until you've decided that I can't do this anymore mentally, you just put one foot in front of the other and you keep going, or you put one arm in front of the other and you keep swimming, or you put one pedal in front of the other and you keep pedaling. And how it's about killing excuses, because it's easy to give yourself a way out. James said that 10% of life is what happens to you and 90% is how you react to it. I think that is true for sport. It's true for triathlon. It's true for work on body composition and trying to change your physical appearance. And it goes for absolutely everything in your life. when you control the controllables and control the things that are in your ability to manipulate or serve in your way, in whatever way you need to, in order to get to your end goal or become the best version of you, control that. Everything outside of that, it's about how you react to it. 10% of life is what happens to you. 90% is how you react to it. So without further ado, this episode that I've been dying to do since I finished Redefine Impossible, James's book, which I've linked in the show notes. My guest, the Iron Cowboy, 50 Ironman triathlons, 50 consecutive days in 50 US states with James Lawrence.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm so excited today to be joined by my guest, James Lawrence, also known as Iron Cowboy. He is a two-time world record holder, author, and motivational speaker. He was born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and currently lives in Utah in the US. He holds the current world record for the most Ironman distance triathlons completed within a single year, 30 in 2012. He also holds the record for the most half Ironman distance triathlons in 1 year, 22 in 2011. I hope both those records still stand, because I was trying to research them, James, and I was like, wait, like, for everyone listening, wait till I tell you what he's done next. In 2015, he completed what has been described as one of the greatest achievements in the history of human endurance. 50 Ironman length triathlons in 50 consecutive days, one in each of the 50 US states. He is the proud father of five wonderful children and the author of the incredible book, Iron Cowboy, Redefine Impossible, and has been someone I've been dying to get on the podcast since reading his book. James, welcome to the show.
Hey man, thank you so much. I always get pumped to talk to you guys over the pond. My ancestry and everything is from over there, and so totally happy to do it. And the two world records, the two first ones, they have been beat. And I was actually super stoked and excited when they were beat, because that's the whole reason why I set these benchmarks and these bars to go for, so that people will believe that it's possible. And it's not about those world records. I don't care about those. It's about the journey. And those people that broke them had an experience. The one that still stands and that will stand for a very long time is the 50-50-50. That was just the perfect storm. And who knows what's going to happen with that one.
That 50-50-50, as I said, reading your book, for those that have been, that follow me on my Instagram, I was tagging that book and tagging clips from it, because it's just so inspiring. It's one of those reads and one of those events that you did that I think captured the imagination of people. It definitely did with me and made me question limitations. Like, Redefine Impossible was probably one of the best titles, because that's what it does. Talk us through what led up to that. Where did that idea come from? What was the thing that made you say, right, I'm going to go and do it? And then we'll jump back and forth, because I'm going to go all over the place, because I'm dying to ask you these questions. So yeah. Tell me, where did it come from?
Yeah, so, and, you know, crazy journey. A lot of people see the headline and that's all they know about in my story. But, man, the reality is this thing's been going on for over a decade. And what a lot of people don't know, unless you've read the book or maybe watched the documentary, we lost everything in the 2008 economy, and it was an opportunity for me to kind of hit the reset button, get out of corporate America. I used to own a mortgage company, and I was just really unhappy, and I had little kids, and I just was kind of lost, and just said, you know what, I've fallen in love with triathlon, the sport. I'm going to try to raise money for charity. I want to make a difference. And so we just kind of set out doing half Ironmans to raise money for charity. And along the way, we were like, man, we've been doing a lot of these this year. Maybe this is a record. And it turns out it was. We set a benchmark. And then that led to the full Ironman world record, 30 Ironmans through 11 countries. And when I finished that year, to be honest, I just looked back at it and I went, man, in the moment, that was tough. But that's not the hardest thing I can do, I think. And I want to know what I do when I reach some mental and physical limits. And so the toughest thing I could think of was 50 Ironmans, 50 days. And I modeled it after Dean Karnazes, 50 marathons in 50 days. And that thing is still in the media today, and the challenge that it was and the feat that it was. And I thought, man, what would happen if I did what he did with Ironmans? Is it possible? And from where I was sitting coming off of 30 Ironmans, in that year, learning how to do an Ironman every single weekend, man, I went all in. I truly believed it was possible. And from where everybody else was sitting, they weren't on the same journey that I was, and perspective is an amazing thing. And, you know, so when I made the announcement, I was mocked and ridiculed for having this goal. But again, I couldn't comprehend why they didn't understand why it was possible. And so I just kind of put on some blinders and went to work for the next 2.5 years to get ready for it.
There's such an incredible message there, even for anybody listening in whatever area of your life it is. It's just, again, how you do anything is how you do everything. When you set these ridiculous goals or big audacious goals, people are going to think, they're going to think you're foolish. Like, if you had questioned, I would imagine that feeling coming back from people going, you're either nuts or they don't believe you can do it. What was your kind of self-talk like, James, in the lead up to, say, preparing for it? Because we'll get into the actual 50 and how you felt during, but hearing all this negative feedback going, you're crazy, you can't do that, which is definitely what you heard, because it's just one of the most incredible feats in human endurance. What was your self-talk like? Did you have to constantly reaffirm yourself, or did you always believe, yeah, I can do this?
Yeah, no, it was the self-talk was easy for me leading up to it, because I was almost naive to how difficult the challenge was going to be. And again, I was sitting coming off of an incredible world record where we had defied what had been done before. And, you know, that was my new normal. And that's the beauty of pushing your body and allowing it to adapt and evolve is the next. It wasn't a huge leap for me in my mind. And so the next step made sense. And so really, I honestly have some audio recordings from prior to the 50 that I listened to, and I was brimming with confidence. I mean, I was like, I'm 100, 200, 300% all in, and I absolutely believe that I can do this. And with this type of thing, to be honest with you, you have to have that mentality. When it's this big, you have to have no doubt. You have to go all in. You got to believe in yourself. And that's truly what I did. And I put on blinders. I stopped talking to people that were negative. I literally eliminated them from my life. And then I surrounded myself with brilliant people that believed in what we were trying to do.
I love that. I had Dean Karnazes on the podcast there a couple of weeks ago. And he said something very, very similar, that you just kind of make a decision that, right, I'm doing this. I'm going to surround myself with the family members and friends and people who believe in me, and I'm just going to go hell for leather with it. What was your training and nutrition like in the lead up to it? And I'm dying to get into the actual event, but did you change up anything drastically? Like, you have 5 kids at home. Obviously, time is always an issue. What was your training and nutrition like leading up to the 50?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I'd put myself in a position to where I was coaching a lot of athletes. And so I could do that kind of in the middle of the night. It was all online, all virtual. And so it allowed me to train and balance life and train during the day when my kids were at school and whatnot. And so it really didn't take a toll on them. And they didn't realize, but we did have to make some major adjustments in how we trained. I mean, you know, my whole career early on, you know, everything's focused on speed and intensity and winning. And with this type of challenge, I had to teach myself how to run slower and pace, and that changed cadence and all these things. So that was a pretty big challenge. And then we also had to put a strong, big emphasis on strength training, because and we were criticized for this heavily. And I've been on the camp for a long time that this you know, endurance thing isn't just an endurance sport; it's a muscular endurance sport. And our limiter is going to be how strong you're going to be. It's not going to be your cardiovascular system. And so for me, we really put a big emphasis on strength training, because we just knew I needed to be durable. We were going to break a body down. And so we, leading up to it, I mean, I was doing heavy, heavy Olympic lifting, for, you know, the biggest endurance challenge ever. And again, we were criticized for that.
And that was your kind of training in the lead up to it. And it's funny because strength and conditioning is actually my background. And when I was reading your book and that section about your training, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, aerobically, you can only be so fit. Mentally, you're only going to test that when you're actually in the 50. But there's a lot of muscular stuff there that people don't realize, that you need to be ridiculously muscularly conditioned to do 50 Ironmans in 50 days. Don't mind the traveling in between and the lack of sleep, etc. What was your nutrition like then in the lead up to it?
Yeah, I mean, just with the amount of calories that we needed, we tried to keep it as clean as possible. Obviously, we're raising money for the Jamie Oliver Foundation for awareness for childhood obesity. And so we were trying to keep everything pretty clean. The challenge for us was just the amount of calories that we had to consume. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan. I try to limit the amount of the meats I do and try to get the highest quality I can, just because it's tougher on the digestive system. But for the most part, you know, if it was put on this earth for us to consume, then I'm consuming it. But again, try to source just the best possible, types of foods. I mean, we do a lot of grains, a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, and then just try to eat as much of it as we can. It's a fuel source. And so, you know, people are like, hey, I got to do this, but I want to fuel off my fat stores and this and that. And I'm like, no, eat food, guys. It's okay.
Do you lean towards carbohydrate or fats, or do you just get in the calories and keep it clean as much as you can? Just as a general rule, I know during the 50, it changes slightly, but in general, do you go more carb-based, fat-based, or does your body just work with whatever you give it?
I would say if I'm going to adhere to any of the ridiculous trends out there and the fads for marketing diets and all the garbage, I would probably say that I would lean more towards like a macro, to where it's a balance between fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. I think they're all incredibly important for performing at a high level. And so I kind of avoid the all carb or all protein or all, you know, all fat or all these, you know, these ridiculous things that are out there, that are, you know, people are using just to try to be relevant or talk about something.
Yeah, I'm really glad that that's the approach, just because people that are listening here that are either thinking about doing a triathlon or a marathon or just training in general, it's finding what works best for your body. Some people work off fats, some people work off carbs, some people work off a mixture. It's all about what works for your digestion, what works for your energy levels, and then kind of sticking to that. Talk me through the 50 then. So obviously the first couple of days, how was that feeling? How are you from day one to day seven? What was the kind of the mental side of it, the physical side? Talk us through the first, say, 7 days of it.
Yeah. The first 7 days are arguably some of the toughest, because you don't ever do seven Ironmans in order to prepare for 50, right? It just doesn't make sense as far as training is concerned. And so that's really the first test to see mentally, are you willing to stick to it? Mentally, are you willing to, you know, have patience to allow the body to start to adapt? That first week is when everybody's going to quit. There's been a couple people that have tried to do the 50, in a single location or whatnot, and they don't make it outside of a week because they're not giving their body times to adapt and recover. The prep for races 11 through 10 happened in 1 through 10. I'm sorry, 11 through 20 happened through 1 through 10. The prep for 20 through 30 happens 1 through 20. The prep for, you know, 30 to 40 happens 1 through 30, 1 through 40. And so people don't allow their bodies time to adapt, evolve, and grow, and they miss out on an opportunity. And so those first seven are so incredibly difficult. Your body's adapting. Your body's adjusting. I remember it was day six in Nevada. If I stopped moving on the marathon, like to fuel or hydrate or talk to somebody or do something, I had the most difficult time getting going again. I either had to be pushed from behind or pulled in order to engage those hip flexors. I had to avoid stepping up onto curbs because I just, those smaller supporting muscles, just, they were like, what the hell are you doing? And it just took them a minute to come around and get used to the fact that we were doing an Ironman every single day. And so it was very, very interesting to fight through that first week. And like I said, it's when most people quit. So that adapting in those first week was incredibly challenging. And really, the crew didn't have their stuff together. We had no idea some of the travel difficulties, all of the ins and outs. And so really the first 20 days was figuring out systems and protocols and what works and what doesn't. And it's just with nobody doing this prior to us, there was no handbook. There was no, you know, so the learning curve was incredibly steep.
Yeah, I can imagine. Just to give people a context, between the swim, the cycle, and the run, how long were you on actually moving your body or exercising each day? I know it varied day to day, but just give people a context of how long you were actually physically working out each day.
Yeah, we averaged about 14 hours for each of the Ironmans. That was move time.
That's unbelievable. When you think about the amount of calories your body's burning, the tension on your tendons and joints and muscles and hip flexors, like it, the more I hear about it, even from your own mouth, the more I hear about it, the more impressive it is. It's one of those feats that sometimes when you hear somebody's achieved a great thing and you break it down, you're like, oh yeah, that sounds doable. That sounds possible. Then the 50s, not at all. It's like the more I hear about it, the more impossible it seems. Talk us through that. You mentioned this point in the book, and it may be a different point again in your own mind that comes to it now, but what was the single lowest point during the entire 50? Take us to that moment, and what did you do to get over it? Because that was a part of the book that really resonated with me.
Man, there's a lot of difficult low points. The most difficult, it's hard to say because each of the difficult moments were the most difficult at that time, and they helped create and put on for to get us to the next one. But you know, a big pivotal one that I talk about a lot was on day 30.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, in Connecticut, when I'm kind of like, I don't know if this is really worth it. You know, just because your body is experiencing such fatigue. And you know, you still have 20 to go, and that becomes such a daunting task, and I really had to shift things mentally and be careful where I put my focus and attention. I had to let go of a lot of the things that I was trying to control and allow the crew to do their job. I just that mind shift of making things palatable. And. And I had to literally be focused on the next minute and the next second. Like when it became dark, it was like, okay, I can be perfect for 1 second. And it just became a matter of being so hyper focused and present on what I was doing and the task at hand. And once I made that shift and realized, you know, what we were trying to do and the impact that it would have, everything changed for us, and those last 20 actually ended up being my fastest 20 of the 50.
It's amazing. There was something else in your book that really resonated, and I was talking to you on email before we came on air about this, about when you're doing something like triathlon, or I think it applies for marathons as well, and any endurance sport, about not getting too high and not getting too low. Can you explain that a small bit for people listening?
As far as like excitement levels?
Yeah, like mood-wise, excitement levels, how you're feeling, you know, your self-talk, your inner dialogue. It's something that really landed with me, that not to get too excited and not to get too down when you're feeling really run down.
Yeah, everything gets, we get hypersensitive, right? When we're exhausted and everything is magnified almost to an unrealistic or a comic level. And so when you're in the thick of things and down and out and things seem impossible, you have to stay as even keel as possible. And just because it's probably not as bad or as great as we're thinking because everything is magnified to such a high level. And so, you know, it's okay to have, you know, celebrate moments and experience defeats because those are the learning moments. But man, you really got to stay even keeled and in control because it's those emotions, if they spiral, they could develop into something else. And you know, that self-talk in those moments is also critical, because we are our toughest critics, right? We will always be hardest on ourselves. And so if we start to spiral in those moments and not try to stay as even keel as possible, that's really when it becomes destructive. You get derailed and your journey will ultimately come to a rapid close.
Yeah, it's something that I ran Marathon de Sable in April, which is 250 kilometers through the Sahara. And on the long day, the 86 kilometers, when I read your words in your book, because I remember between 50 and 60 kilometers, I was like full tilt. I'm like, I feel amazing. And then I got to like 70 to 80 kilometers. I'm like, oh my God, my body's broken down. And I remember reading the words, I highlighted it in the book. And I'm like, oh, that's great advice. I'm like, I'm going to thank James for that, because I'm going to do it for all endurance events from now on.
Good.
One of the parts of your book, to take a slightly different direction, is something that really resonated with me. And it's a sign that you have on your wall in your basement, it's of your old home, because you're after moving into your new house in Utah. And I think it was in your garage or in your basement. And it said in capitals, "No success can compensate for failure at home." And I love that quote. I think, as I've got a little girl, she's 3. And I know you've got your 5 kids and your wife, Sunny. As somebody with 5 kids and the schedule that you have now with speaking, etc., what do you do to balance your training? Do you have any system in terms of, do you wait till they go to school? Do you get up early in the morning to do it? What does your system generally look like now? And again, talk us through any tips or advice, because we have a lot of people listening that either have kids or they're single parents and they don't put themselves first in terms of, right, I don't have the time to train, which is something that a lot of people will tell themselves. Can you talk us through any tips or routines or tricks that you have, or any systems that you use, or what works for you?
Yeah, first of all, anybody says they don't have time is full of shit. you have time. I'm so sick and tired of excuses and people and time and blah. Dude, we've all got the same time in all of our days, and we all have responsibilities. It's the reality is you're not willing to sacrifice something else. You're not willing to sacrifice your phone game, your Candy Crush, or whatever it is, whatever's monopolizing your time. It's flat out an excuse, and I'm so sick and tired of it. We're not amazing. We're not special. It's about scheduling and sacrificing. Leading up to the 50, I was coaching athletes. We were caring for a lady that had Alzheimer's. We had 5 little kids. My wife was in her final year of graduating with her bachelor's degree in psychology. We were planning the 50. I was training there was just so many things. And we sacrificed sleep. When the kids are little, you go early in the morning and late at night, because family's important. Now that they're bigger, I enjoy my sleeping in and I work out during the day. I do it around other things. It is absolutely an issue of scheduling, prioritizing, and writing out a checks and balance of what you're willing to sacrifice and whatnot. Because if you're not willing to sacrifice it, something on your list that you're experiencing or doing, then the goal isn't worth it to you. And so stop talking about it, but above anything else, kill the excuses, because it's super annoying. Nobody wants to hear it, and just, you're probably wasting more time complaining about it than doing something about it.
Oh, you're lighting a fire under me, James, because you're preaching to the converted. Like, one of the things that I regularly say on the podcast is, if you can reframe "I don't have time" versus "it's not a priority," you can see how quickly things start to shift, because that those excuses kind of fall by the wayside when you realize that, oh, do you know what? I actually don't want this bad enough. I can't prioritize the time to work out or train, because you do have the time. You're just not prioritizing it because it's not of a high enough value for you. I can totally see why you're taking off as a speaker.
Yeah, I get this. This fires me up more than anything else, because, you know, people are like, oh, you were able to accomplish what you did because you're rich and single. No, dude, I've got 5 kids and we were broke as hell. And we figured out a way to do it because we were willing to sacrifice and it meant something to us. And we wanted a different outcome in our lives. It's just so frustrating and again, I'm preaching to the choir, but this isn't for you. It's for the people listening. But it's just so frustrating when people say that. I get emails every single day. Hey, you've inspired me, which is incredible. And I love hearing that. And then they tell me their goal that they want to do. And then I'm like, oh man, that's amazing. Let me help you out. I'll kind of get a game plan going for you. And then I lay out what it's going to take. And they're like, oh yeah, maybe I don't want to, maybe I don't want to do that. And so the two biggest things is great, guys, be inspired, be motivated, amp the hell out of yourselves. But reality is if you have a big goal, you got to give it the time respect that it deserves. And two, you got to really be willing to show up every single day, and you got to be willing to sacrifice something. One of the best examples I see and love is I'm a big MMA fight fan, and Conor McGregor is just an unbelievable example of belief and conviction and going all in, and except for this last fight, he's outworked everybody in the industry. And with him, I mean, he had the goal to become the number one recognized fighter in the world, and he had no idea how he was going to get there. But I guarantee you, he woke up every single day, put his feet on the ground, and said, "Doubt me now." And I love that attitude, and that's what people aren't willing to do. And for Conor McGregor, I mean, he put $250,000, I mean, $250 million in his pocket after the Mayweather fight, and he's now living his dreams. And so that's what people aren't willing to do, is show up every single day and fight for what they really want and make sacrifices.
I love it. Like, the thing is, as long as your actions are mapping to your ambition, because the bigger the ambition, the bigger the actions have to be. And if you want to run, or, you know, a marathon, then your actions have to map to that. If you want to try and attempt the 50, like James, you've got to really fucking outwork it and make sure that your actions are mapping to that ambition. I don't have time is something that obviously fires you up, and I love it, because I don't think that message can be said enough, because being heard in different ways resonates in different ways with people, and it's something that's stops people executing on the things that they want. Is there any other topic that particularly fires you up, or something when you're doing motivational speaking, you're like, oh, I'm covering this today because people need to hear it?
Oh man. Yeah, there's so many. I mean, one of the biggest things is believing in you. I mean, it really fires me up, and not giving focus and attention to all the people that are bringing you down. Just the shift from negative to positive. I just did a small tour through Sri Lanka, and culturally that mindset is just so focused on the negative or the failure and all of these things, and these questions kept coming up, and I just saw this massive trend of putting your focus and attention on the wrong thing. And I come from a great home, and my mother always said, James, son, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And if you want something different, do something different. And we've all heard this. And then she always followed it up with, James, 10% of life is what happens to you. 90% is how you choose to react to it. And it just fires me up when people are putting all of their focus and attention on the crap they can't control. And it's about doing the small things consistently. Success comes from doing a lot of little things consistently over a long period of time. And those kind of things just get me going, and they're just super simple, but people don't get it. The toughest thing to do is just starting, getting moving. Motion creates emotion, right? And so when people, they're frustrated, can't start. One, they're putting the focus on the wrong things, and two, they just have an unwillingness to start doing something moving.
What advice, besides just getting started, for somebody that's listening now that has a goal that they want to do, relative to whatever it is, what advice would you tell them? Obviously, get moving, because motion creates motion. Is there any other tips or things that you would say to that person? If I was sitting with you now, James, I'm like, look, I really want to do the 50. You know, I want to go and do what you did. What would you say to me in terms of my mindset? What do I need to get right?
Yeah, one, you got to believe in you, but two, you got to surround yourself with people that are going to help you get there. And if you can't afford that, or can't find it, or whatnot, you've got to do your best job at putting together a plan to get started. And then once you have that plan, forget the big goal. Just eliminate it out of your mind, because it's so big, you probably can't wrap your mind around it anyways. And you need to focus on the simplest of tasks. And success breeds success, and confidence breeds confidence. And so when you break things down to the simplest of things, then you will start to pick things off and build confidence and momentum. And really, one of the biggest things people don't do is sit down and isolate what their fears are. they're doing the tasks that are easy to them. And that's not what's going to take you to success. You got to do the tasks that scare you. And take 10 things that scare you and break them down into 10 easier tasks and break it down even more until you can pallet one and start to grow. And like I said, these are all journeys and they take a long time and people don't give the goals the respect that they deserve to go. And so you got to break it down and you got to start picking or chipping away at these, and eventually you'll gain experience, you'll become more mentally tough, you'll become more physically tough, and now you're starting to gain experience and momentum. But all that takes time. You need to be you got to have patience, but you got to have aggressive patience, because you got to have patience and allow things to unfold, but you got to attack it and be aggressive with it. So you got to have, you know, be patiently aggressive.
I love it. It's there's a thought process that I can't remember who I heard it from. I think Gary Vaynerchuk or some entrepreneur, but it's macro patience, micro speed, where you're constantly patient about the long term, knowing that it's a process, but you're micro impatient. You're doing everything today that can get you one step closer to the end goal.
I think yes.
I think you've said it. It's there's nothing else that can't be done when you break it down like that. You know, if you can reframe your mindset like that, I think you can achieve anything. I think you're walking testament to it with the 50.
How did you phrase that?
Macro patience, micro speed.
Macro patience, micro speed. I love that.
It's yours. That's I stole it. A lot of
people are missing that, dude. You know what you're talking about. Listen to this dude. He's got his stuff on point. That is good stuff right there, and it's the way that I live my life and the way that I try to help and coach people. But that's a brilliant way to put it. Macro patience, micro speed. Love it.
We'll take a little bit of a different direction, James, and I'm going to throw a couple of questions at you just to kind of get into your mindset as well and find a little bit more about you. When you think of the word successful, besides a family member, besides, again, your wife or anyone in your inner circle, who's the first person to come to mind and why?
For like a mentor of mine?
Even the first person to come to mind, maybe it might be an athlete, it might be a mentor. Is there anybody that when I say the word successful, you're like, yeah, that's the person who I think of?
Yeah, I'm a big sports guy. I love it. And so a lot of my stuff stems back to sports. I got three of them. Tiger Woods, George St. Pierre, and LeBron James. All three of them for possibly different reasons, but just unbelievable journeys. Rises and falls, consistency, showing up, hard work, all of it. And then McGregor too. Those guys just unbelievable examples in the sport world that have taken things to the highest of high levels under such extreme microscopes, and the mental fortitude and the physical toughness and all of it put together, it's just another level.
I love it. Do you have any particular favorite? If I had to pick one that you're like, they're my favorite athlete, would you be able to pick?
Man,
if I said, James, you get to go to dinner with this guy and you get to spend the evening picking his brain, who do you choose?
Oh, geez. Tiger, GSP, LeBron. Dude, I don't want to choose. No, all right, I'll pick. I'm going to go with LeBron James.
LeBron. Well, if you had one question you'd ask LeBron, and it's like, right, you get to ask him anything you want, what would you ask LeBron?
Holy cow. You know, I've all my journeys because they've been unique to what I've been doing, and I'm talking out of the other side of my mouth now, because I say surround yourself with coaches and whatnot, but then I really go inward and kind of do me, because there's value to both those things. A lot of people try to mimic what somebody else is doing, and they're just trying to match that person's excellence. And for me, it's going above and beyond that. And somebody else's standard should just be kind of your benchmark to get to blow through that lid. What would I ask LeBron? The journeys are just so different. I just think we would have a casual conversation, but I would want him. I was in an article in Sports Illustrated where I was on the same list as LeBron James for the 50 fittest freaks, and I want all the other 50 athletes to sign the copy of the Sports Illustrated that I was in with them, and so I'd ask him to sign it, but you know what? I've been asked a lot of things, and I've never been asked this question. So I don't have an answer. I don't know what I'd ask him.
Oh, yeah, I completely went off script because you named three unbelievable athletes there. I was like, oh, I'm going to flesh this one out for the first time. So that's new to the podcast too. So that's probably why no one's heard it either. Next one. I know you're a big fan of movies. Do you have a favorite movie?
Yeah, Rudy.
Who's in Rudy? I don't think I've seen that. Embarrassingly, and I'm a movie guy. I don't think I've seen it.
Rudy, R-U-D-Y?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it. Who's in Rudy? I'm scribbling that down right now. Is that on Netflix?
Man, I don't know if it's on Netflix. I own the DVD of it. It's the story of the guy's real name is Rudy Rudiger. And he was a smaller individual, small town, steel factory worker, and he just had a dream to play for Notre Dame. And it's the underdog. It's an unbelievable, really, really cool story. And I actually got to meet the real Rudy Rudiger. He does some speaking now. He's much older, but he lives in Vegas, and I've shared the stage with him a few times. It's a great movie. Yeah, it's just called Rudy. R-U-D-Y, just a great, great movie.
Oh, I love it. I'm 100% checking that out after, because I remember reading, just when I was doing research for the episode, I'm like, everything that I read, the movies came up with your name in it, because it's like, is that what you use for your downtime?
I use it as a lot of my flight time, because I'm in the air a lot. But when we were doing a lot of the, I mean, we get winter here in Utah, and so I had training for the 50. I was doing a lot of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 hour sessions on the indoor bike, and so I had to occupy my mind. In our new home, I just built a theater in our basement, and so we'll cue the movie thing back up and get caught up. But I've been watching a lot of movies on the airplanes.
I love it. Talk to me about your training right now. What are you doing right now? Are you just doing some maintenance work, or what's everything looking like right now?
Yeah, so man, life has been chaotic the last year. Really allowed my body to heal and recover from the 50. It's been 3 years now. I needed a mental break. I needed a physical break. I'm now to the point where I'm ready to get back into full training. We just moved into our dream home. I've built a 1,400 square foot training facility in my home. And I have three big races that I'm going to get ready for next year. Cape Epic, which is a 6-day mountain bike stage race in South Africa. It's like the Tour de France of mountain biking. And then that's in March. In July, I'm going to do the Challenge Roth over in Germany. I believe my fastest Ironman is still in me. And then I'm going to finish the year in Switzerland doing the Swiss Epic, which is a 5-day mountain bike stage race. And then we also put on two races here in the U.S. called Utah's Toughest and Vermont's Toughest, and they're extreme Ironman distance races where they're up in the mountains. And I'm toying with the idea of racing the Utah's Toughest in August here.
It shows that there's plenty left in the tank, that's for sure. For people listening, you do a lot of coaching with people. Do you have any advice for anybody looking to get into triathlon?
Yeah, one of the big mistakes I see a lot of people make, we coach athletes around the world. Anybody that wants to check it out can go to teamironcowboy.com.
I'll link that in the show notes for everybody listening too. I'll link that in the show notes so you don't even have to search on it. I've got you covered, James.
Perfect. The biggest mistake I see people make is they're motivated, they're inspired, and they're like, I'm going to go do an Ironman. And my biggest advice to people is like, let's take our time with this. Let's really allow your body to adapt and grow. Let's start with some speed work. Let's start with some general fitness, and let's have some fun racing those distances. I mean, a lot of people don't know, but I did competitive sprint racing for, you know, 4 years before I even took on my first half, before I even conceptualized doing an Ironman. And I think that's why I was successful, because I built those foundational blocks. Ironman racing just has a steep learning curve, and like we've talked about in this show already, the ligaments, the tendons, those smaller supporting staff of our body, I just see too many people get hurt. So my biggest advice for people training and whatnot, one, get a coach, or just ask for advice. There's tons of free information out there. And two, start with foundational stuff and get technique down right, and get proper form and good equipment.
Yeah, it's really, really good advice. Do you have a favorite part of Ironman? Do you, again, from the events you have next year, I could probably take a guess, but do you have a favorite part of the Ironman, the run, the bike, or the swim?
Yeah, it's for sure biking. It's just so enjoyable. I gravitated more to it naturally. It's the least tough on my body. I grew up a wrestler, so I've got some shoulder issues. So swimming is difficult or painful. And then running, I'm getting more into trail running. I'm really enjoying that. I think I'm going to tackle a race in Utah called the Wasatch 100, which is a 100 miler in 2020. But I really want to do it right. I want to build up to that. And so I'm dabbling more into the, you know, I've done over 90 iron distance races. And so I think the one in Germany will be probably my last one. And then I'm just going to get into more of the fun races, trail running, mountain biking, adventure races, stuff like that.
Is that because of your shoulder?
Is that because of my shoulder? No, yeah. It's just I want to get away from swimming. But I think it's more, just something new. I've accomplished everything I've wanted to accomplish in that space.
I love it. Okay, there's a couple of more questions because I'm very conscious of time, because for those listening, James is on another podcast like directly after this because he's just grinding it out. Because James, on your stories, Instagram stories, mate, you've been traveling all over the world speaking. So it's great to see you doing more podcasts, doing interviews, doing speaking all over the place. Again, your Instagram stories are awesome. And I'm starting to pick up some tips from your training too. So looking forward to getting more of those. But a couple of questions I want to finish on. If you could go back and give your 18, 19, or 20-year-old self any advice, it might be life advice, training advice, anything along those lines, what would you say to your 18, 19, or 20-year-old self? You can choose, you can put yourself and place yourself in a moment in time. What advice would you offer them?
I think the bigger question is would my 18 or 19 year old self listen? and if he would, I would tell him to not care what other people think, because the opinions of others is not a direct reflection of who you are and what you're capable of. Especially in today's, you know, world of bullying and social media and hiding behind screens and all these things, believing in you is what I would say. And don't listen to anybody. Create your own lane because you're the most exceptional person on this planet. And believe that. And so I think that's what I would end up telling myself.
I think that's great advice for anybody listening. Another thing, just because of what you said there. Because of your profile online, because of when you set up doing something so big like the 50, it's inevitable that there's going to be hate or negativity coming your way in terms of comments, social media. You're just going to get that by the law of numbers with the amount of people that are following you. How do you deal with any negative comments or negativity aimed in your direction, either in the lead up to the 50, during, or even now in general? How do you handle that?
Yeah, you have to learn just to not give them any energy, because they're... You're not going to change their minds. There's no point in fueling that. That's what they want. They want a reaction out of you. I've learned that the amount of positivity that we're dealing with is far outweighs the negativity. And we filmed a documentary that focused a lot on the showcase that type of negativity, so people can realize that it exists, that it's cruel, and how to overcome that adversity. And the documentary, I believe it's on Netflix UK, and in here in the US it's on Amazon Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime here as well. It's not on the Netflix UK as of yet, but I'll link up the Amazon Prime link to that documentary in the show notes as well. I haven't watched that yet, but as soon as I finish the book, and as soon as I got done talking with you on here, I'm like, the documentary's next. I'm like, I got to put a visual to this.
And it's interesting too, because they all come from a little bit different perspective. And you know, you can read the book and still really enjoy the documentary, and you can watch the documentary and absolutely enjoy the book.
I love it. Okay, final question: do you have a quote that you live by or refer to often?
Man, I say a lot of stuff, but for me, the one that just jumps out right now, and what we've been talking about is show up every single day and do a lot of little things consistently over a long period of time. I mean, that's just where people get stuck. I like to say, quote Conor McGregor and doubt me now. You know, that goes along the lines of believing in you and figuring out what your best self is. The best version of you is on the other side of fear. A lot of us don't realize, you know, that's what's holding us back. And then ultimately, you said it earlier, there's no success outside the home that'll ever compensate for failure inside the home.
I have that. That's actually, I have that planted on the whiteboard in front of me, taken directly from your book after I highlighted it. It's one I'd never heard before, and just really, really resonated with me. And as you said, behind every fear is a person you want to be. And there's been so much value in so many different things that you've said, James. So I cannot thank you enough for coming on. I know how busy your schedule is with training, with the kids. Can you tell everybody listening, where's the best place to find out more about you? I'll be linking up your book, the documentary, the website for people that want to train with you or anything with the online resources. It'll all be in the show notes on BrianKeenFitness.com. But tell everybody listening, where's the best place to follow your journey?
Yeah, I'm very active on social media, mostly on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Iron Cowboy James, and then we post on our Facebook fan page too, which is Iron Cowboy.
And I'll be linking both of those up in the show notes. James, thank you so much again for everything you do. Thank you for inspiring. Thank you for writing the book and just being awesome. And thank you for time, most importantly.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting actually on medical clearance. Ugh, yikes. So stay tuned for that, and remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.